I'm Rosie.
And I'm Ryan.
And we make the Voice of the Victim podcast.
We share stories about horrible things that happen to real people, and we try our best to tell it from the perspective of the victims and the survivors.
We also try to spread awareness of abuse that could be taking place around any of us, and talk about ways we can stay alert to help prevent it.
We want to be encouraging to survivors and help other empathetic people to appreciate the value of awareness.
Find Voice of the Victim podcast anywhere you listen to podcasts.
And remember, if you see something, say something.
I'm Paige, and you're listening to Reverie True Crime. Today's episode is a listener suggestion, and it's about a young girl whose possible murder happened in 1992, and it's still unsolved to this day. This is one of those episodes where I feel like everyone is going to have strong opinions on both sides, so let's jump right into it. Lee Ochi was born on the 21st of August, 1979, in Honolulu, Hawaii, to Vicky Felton and Donald Ochi. Her parents were in the United States Army, and that's how they met in California. In 1977, they got married. Their marriage lasted a few years, but in 1981, they got a divorce. Donald Ochi moved to Germany. Donald and his daughter Lee kept in touch with each other, and Lee would go visit him. Since he was all the way in Germany, Lee resided with her mom, Vicky, and they decided to make Tupelo, Mississippi their home. Growing up, Lee was known for her sweet nature. She was friendly and intelligent. A little girl who loved animals and pizza. She was particularly fond of horses and was interested in horseback riding. She was also a good student, who was especially great at math. She was said to display what others called disruptive behaviors. She was fidgety, and because of that, oftentimes other kids kept their distance from her. It's the morning of the 27th of August, 1992. Lee had just turned 13 a few days prior. It was a little stormy the night before, and Vicky said that her daughter was terrified of storms, so they slept in the same bed together. She says they got up together and had breakfast. Her mom let her stay by herself at the home, supposedly for the first time ever. Their home was located at 105 Honey Locust Drive. Vicky left around 8 in the morning to go to work at Leggett & Platt, which is a manufacturing company. Lee's grandmother and Lee were supposed to go to open house at Lee's middle school at some point during the day, and then they were going to have supper at Taco Bell. During this time, her dad, Donald, had moved to Arlington County, Virginia, after a tour in Iraq's Desert Storm. Vicky gets to her job, and people were abuzz about the storm that was brewing in relation to Hurricane Andrew, and it was going to get bad in Tupelo. So Vicky called Lee, wanting to warn her about it before 9 that morning. There were tornado watches in the area, so she just wanted to make sure Lee was doing okay. There was no answer. Vicky started to panic, ran out of her office and straight home to see if Lee was okay. Her work was only 1.5 miles away from their house, so it only took a few minutes to get there. By Vicky's accounts of what happened, when she got to the house, the door to the garage was open. She went inside the house, and there are conflicting reports on whether the lights were on or off. Sometimes Vicky says they were off, and other times she says they were on. Vicky said that she couldn't see Lee anywhere, and then she discovered blood was covering the walls. She claims to have looked in the bedrooms, the backyard, and their shed, but there was no trace of Lee. Vicky stated, quote, I started calling for Lee and going through all the rooms. Then I went into her bedroom. Her favorite blanket was crumpled up on the floor, and I was very scared, end quote. When she collected herself, she called 911 at exactly 9 a.m. Law enforcement came to the home and discovered more blood, pools of it, in Lee's bedroom, which was upstairs. Authorities said that the blood was still wet, and there was also splatter on a doorframe that was consistent with head trauma to someone about 5 feet tall. Lee was 4 feet 10 inches tall. There was also blood covering the walls of the hallway, bathroom, and Lee's door to her bedroom, and a blood-stained doorframe that faced the kitchen with strands of hair on it as well. What the authorities gathered was that since there was blood in the bathroom, that was a sign that someone had tried to clean the crime scene. Vicky told the police that Lee's shoes, reading glasses, sleeping bag, and underclothes were gone. However, in the clothes hamper, detectives found one of Lee's nightgowns and a bra soaked in blood. The Tupelo Police Chief Bart Aguirre said, quote, because it looked like the blood had dripped down onto her nightgown, you would think the injury had to be above the neck, possibly, end quote. There was nothing indicating that someone broke in or that there was any type of forced entry into the house. Jordan Morse was Lee's middle school boyfriend, and he would call her every evening. He went to a different school that had already began on August 27, 1992. Jordan recalled, quote, I rushed off the bus to call her like I always did as soon as I got home from school, and her mom picked up the phone. I asked where Lee was, and Vicky said she was missing. I don't know what missing is. I'm 12 years old. What do you mean, missing? And she said, we don't know where she is. We can't find her. End quote. After Lee Ochi vanished, there were searches put together all around Tupelo. The main searches would include wooded locations. They were also conducting searches by flying over the locations. The people searching didn't find anything. Lee's dad, Donald, said, quote, I felt that my daughter was dead the day my ex-wife called me and told me she was missing. My theory is that some bastard beat that child to death in that house, end quote. He also talked about searching for Lee in September of 1992. He said he was informed by many residents to look at the mom. He said, quote, I already was doing that. I don't know if her mother was involved, end quote. To add to what the locals were saying, rumors started to swirl, speculating Lee's stepdad, Barney Yarborough, abused Lee. People also said Lee came to school with bruises and a black eye, but that was never proven as a result of abuse. Vicky and Barney were separated at this time, and law enforcement ruled him out as a suspect. He had a solid alibi, and he did pass a polygraph test. On the 4th of September, 1992, it had now been 8 days since Lee was missing. A McDonald's employee in Boonville let the police know that they saw a girl that looked like Lee Ochi in a vehicle that came through the drive-thru. Well, it turned out that that child they thought was Lee was in fact someone else. On the 9th of September, something strange happened. Someone mailed a package to Vicky's house, and it was addressed to Barney Yarborough, and the return address was the same as the family's home address, which they found out the package had been sent out from Boonville. Inside this package were Lee Ochi's glasses. When this happened, the FBI jumped in and started to look for Lee. They did DNA test the stamp that was on the envelope with Lee's glasses inside. Whoever put the stamp on didn't use their saliva, but water. The police chief said that he thought the glasses were only mailed as a distraction and to veer them into another direction, saying, quote, "There was no random letter or anything like that that came with those glasses. It was just the glasses. You would think that if it was an actual case of kidnapping, you'd expect a little more to also come with it," end quote. Donald took great measures to guarantee people didn't stop thinking about his daughter's case. He printed out ample amounts of flyers that were supplied to interstate bus services, local businesses, and truck drivers, and he confirmed her information was sent to the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children, as well as ChildQuest. He even went to psychics for assistance, and each one declared that a body of water was in some way related to the case. On the 9th of November, 1993, the Jackson, Mississippi newspaper, the Clarion Ledger, stated that a coroner in Monroe County positively identified through dental records that there was a skull of a person discovered in a ditch alongside a soybean field by a farmer, and it belonged to Lee Ochi. A few days after this, the identification was retracted, and a state medical examiner would do more forensic testing on the skull. They determined that the skull, in fact, was that of Pollyanna Sue Keith, a 27-year-old female who had gone missing in March of 1993. Barney passed his polygraph test, and afterwards, Vicky was given three individual tests, one with local police and two with the FBI. Vicky failed all the tests. Also, just to add quickly, in December of 1996, Barney passed away. Investigators revealed in August of 1997 they had a suspect in the case, but refused to publicly name them. Years later, a fresh search of Lee's former backyard was performed, as it was made known that the public works office had been putting in rocks as a method of drainage control at the time that Lee went missing. It was believed that she may have inadvertently been buried by those working on the site. However, that was later shown to be false by the use of cadaver dogs who didn't pick up on her scent. Fast forward to 2017. The police chief said that Vicky was still a person of interest in the case, but no charges were made against her, saying, quote, "You still can't eliminate her. There are still too many unanswered questions for Vicky, and I don't know if that is unusual for somebody to go off to work and say, well, I just left Lee, but I'm going to call and check on her. Why check on her that soon after she just left her?" End quote. Well, Vicky argues and says that she absolutely did not have anything to do with the disappearance of her daughter. In a 2012 interview with the Daily Journal, Vicky said Lee would never open the door to a stranger, so anyone entering the house without breaking in would have to be someone she knew and trusted. Vicky's suspect was not only a Sunday school and vacation Bible school teacher, he also shared Lee's love of horses and horseback riding at stables just off North Thomas Street. He also lived in West Tupelo, just more than a mile from the Honey Locust home. She has openly said that she suspects he is the one who kidnapped her daughter. His name is Oscar McKinley Kearns, who goes by Mike. Reportedly, the church they went to would have lock-ins, which, from attending lock-ins as a child, that's where you play games and watch movies all night. There's lots of food, and you bring your sleeping bags and spend the night. The doors are locked, so none of the kids can go outside. Well, Mike attended these lock-ins, and someone from the church said Lee was always on Mike's lap. Mike knew when Lee was home alone. He would visit them and even gave her a ride home from one of the lock-ins. Was his interest of vacation Bible school and Sunday school because that gave him a way to be around children all of the time? In 1999, Mike was convicted for abducting a couple and raping the woman. 9 months after Lee vanished, Mike abducted a girl who was a freshman in high school that he met at a church in Tupelo. He kidnapped her from her Memphis, Tennessee home, raped her, and then he drove the freshman high schooler to school, which is when she immediately called the police. For the last crime, Mike was sent to prison to serve over 8 years. He only served half of that and was released in 1997 before he kidnapped the couple and raped the woman that would lead to his following conviction. Mike's scheduled release from the Mississippi State Pen in Parchman was in March 2019, and he is now in his early 60s. Tupelo police, along with the FBI, have tried to interview Mike many times, but he will not talk to them. When the investigation first started, Mike led the investigators on by saying he would take a polygraph test if his lawyer said it was okay. Then attorney Joey Langston didn't allow Mike to take the lie detector test. He has refused every time to take a polygraph test. Vicky, however, may have failed all 3 polygraph tests, which we know are unreliable, but she has never refused one and she's always cooperated with the police. From what I've found, Vicky, at least in 2018, was and possibly still is living in Tecumseh, Michigan, sharing a home with her parents. Donald Ochi said of his daughter's disappearance, quote, "This coward must have really felt like a tough man or woman to beat a little girl to death. Often I cannot help but think of how horrified Lee must have been while this piece of garbage beat her to death and watched her bleed out in the hall," end quote. He has also said, quote, "I want to live to see her body located so that I can see that she is properly buried. Then I will smile when the son of a bitch who did this dies in the Mississippi State Death Chamber," end quote. When speaking to an author about being a person of interest, Vicky said, quote, "That has never been a bother to me. It's never been about me. It's about finding Lee. And I didn't care, and I still don't care what anyone says about any of it. I have never not cooperated with anybody, and I am not fazed by what they say," end quote. Jordan Moore stated, quote, "She was a really precious person, and she didn't deserve what happened to her. I was a kid without a whole lot of friends. I wasn't extraordinarily social, but she was my best friend," end quote. Donald Ochi has since remarried and started a family. He hopes Lee passed away the day that she disappeared, so that she didn't endure any suffering for days on end, and he wants the culprit to be found and prosecuted for what they did. Donald said that he'd composed a book of advice for Lee, which he had intended to give to her on one of her birthdays. He's upset about never having been able to give it to her. Was this a case of a mother doing this to her daughter for whatever wicked reason? Or was this an attack by Mike, possibly knowing Lee was at home that morning all alone? Lee didn't answer the door for strangers, keep in mind. Was he there to possibly rape her? She fought back and things went too far? I know Vicky has been a suspect in the case, and nothing is impossible. At first, even I had strong beliefs that Vicky may have been the one who did this. But diving further into it, she seems like the type of person who it would be easy to put the blame on. At the time of Lee's disappearance, the church was having some groundwork done, and out of nowhere, reportedly, Mike told the pastor something along the lines of, quote, "Lee could possibly be buried under all of this concrete," end quote. Anything is possible, and until there is concrete evidence, we may never know what actually happened to Lee Ochi. Lee Ochi's case is still currently open. Anyone with information about what happened to Lee or any details you can provide is asked to call the Tupelo Police Department at 662-841-6491 or Crime Stoppers of Northeast Mississippi at 1-800-773-TIPS or 8477. Will there ever be justice for Lee Ochi? We can only hope so. Also, before I go, I want to thank my patrons, Lorraine, Denise, Haley, Melissa, and Emily. Y'all are super sweet for supporting at patreon.com/reverietruecrime. You guys can go there and check out the $3 tier. I'd love to have you join. You'll get bonus episodes, early access to episodes that are ad-free, stickers and other things in the mail, bloopers, and just a lot of extra content. Thank you for supporting just by listening to the podcast. I think every one of you are just absolutely the best. And until next time, y'all know the drill. Stay safe and stay healthy. I love you guys.